Hi everyone, thanks for coming here. I hope you had a good lunch. Today we'd like to talk about the Enterprise Wires. The objective of this session is to get your overall view about the Link Server architecture, and when we talk about replacing a PBX, what features you have in it, and overall what you get if you want to add it as a PBX or you want to integrate with the existing PBX. And then we will do a deep dive in the call routing, also the media bypass and link call handling services. So we will discuss, we will go from the, in the beginning talking about the Link Server, the features it has, a little bit difference between 2010 and 2013, and then we'll do a deep dive. So my name is Zahid Said. I am communications TSP working out of Reston office in USA. I born in Pakistan. I am with Microsoft since 2011. So I am a certified solution link master, and also I have a CCIY. So I have about 8 years experience working with Cisco in different countries, and now working with Microsoft. On the right-hand side, you see like a lot of kites flying and all of that. This is one of the favorite things we do in Pakistan. That's being said, we'll ask Adam to introduce.
So my name's Adam Gent. I work for a company called Enterhouse Interactive. I'm also a Link MVP, and I'll be taking the second half of the presentation. So I get to sit down, look pretty for the first half, and drink coffee.
Thanks, Adam. So as I said, we will cover about the Link Server, different topologies. By the way, how many of you are here customers, if you can raise your hand? Okay. And how many partners? Good.
And of those customers, how many have deployed Enterprise Voice? Okay, and keep your hand up if it's your only PBX, so there's no Nortel, Cisco, Avaya, or anything else in there. Okay.
And anybody planning to deploy Enterprise Voice? We have two, three, four, a couple of them. Okay. That's good. So before even we talk about Link, the first thing normally when I go as architect to the customers, we try to find out what the business goals are, what the business drivers are, what they're looking for, what the requirements are. The first thing they say, okay, we need IAM presence and conferencing maybe. These are the key things they think the Link can do. And the rest, maybe we already have a PBX, either from Cisco, Avaya, Nortel, we have it. So we are looking for these capabilities. Then what I normally do is we discuss, okay, these are the things, definitely you will get it from the Link. What about conferencing? What about like if we do web, video, and multi-party, high definition video conferencing, then they say, yeah, this is good to have, maybe we have it, and we will look at that, how the Link can provide us. Okay, what about the, if we talk about the other things like desktop sharing, and if you are in a conference call, if you want to do desktop sharing, you want to do OneNote and SharePoint, all of what is, yeah, that's also normally, I get it, it's good to have if Link can do it. And what about the federation? So most of them have a different concept about the federation. Okay, we can talk to other partners or customer which way we can talk about that. So once we nail down those business requirements, and then the first thing, okay, here, audio, video presence, video conferencing, you get it, and from where they are getting it. Normally they say, okay, we have a PBX, and then we have another video solution that can give us multi-party, high-definition video. That has nothing to do with PBX, but it integrates up to some extent with the existing PBX. And about the conferencing, yes, we have another party who is doing the conferencing. We have the bridge number, but that is not an integrated solution. So first thing I would suggest always, let's find out what the requirements are as a customer, as a partner, what the business drivers are. Not for today, let's look about 5 years, 10 years down the road. Where we are heading, how many users we have today, and where we would like to go down the road in 3-4 years. And the misconception is always, work with your networking team and also work. There is a collaboration team normally in a bigger organization, and there is a networking team. A networking team normally controls the bandwidth, they control the PBX, but the collaboration team, they're more on the desktop side. So in order to link perfectly working fine. These two teams need to work together. Based on my experience, I can tell you, maybe I visited, let's say, 100 customers, and 80 of them, they are not working together. Once you're rolling out the link, they are saying, okay, we don't know what the expectations were for the bandwidth. We don't know how, you know, the ports needs to be open. So user experience got impacted on that. And I will ask Adam, based on his experience, what do you think, how important it is to do the network assessment?
It's one of the critical steps which always seems to get missed. Funny enough, I was just having a conversation about this. A few years ago, Microsoft kind of shot themselves in the foot and said, you don't need Quoz, we've got this great codec, it'll just work. And the truth is, it was a silly comment to make, and you do need Quoz. With networks, everybody thinks they have loads of capacity. They run gig to the desktop, they have plenty of capacity between sites. The problem is they don't monitor them too closely. If they do, they only monitor WAN links and not things to the desktop. So they forget that a person working on architectural diagrams will have a phone call and then start pulling a 300 meg graphical art file down, or a architecture diagram, or a multi-layered whatever, or start moving an ISO between their local machine and a data store. And the minute that happens, their link call just dies or ends or goes horrible because they didn't implement Quoz, they didn't do the network assessment, and they didn't look at what they need on the network. And one of the fatal flaws we tend to see is that it goes back to people not talking. So you get the network team who have configured their network, they put Quoz on, but they said, you know what, we're the only ones who can manipulate Quoz. So if any desktop gives us a Quoz setting, we're going to strip it off and ignore it. But yeah, if we add it on, we'll honor it, it'll be great. So the desktop team go and configure the link client to tag the packets, and they think they're doing it correctly. It's not until there's a problem that they work out that they haven't. And the teams have to work, the network team have to allow the PC to generate the tags and honor them. And if they don't work together, things may work for 6 months and it may be fine, it'll get through the pilot, it may get through the first onboarding of users. And it usually fails when you then start onboarding the second and third batch of users, which then start including things like CEOs and CIOs and other C-level execs. And it all goes wrong, and it's the worst time possible for it to go wrong. So it is a step that needs to be done. There's plenty of ways of doing it. There's MCS offer solutions for it. Partners offer network assessments. You can do it yourself if you read the planning documents and do it. But it's something that needs to be done, and something which just shouldn't be going, oh, well, we'll do it later when we deploy video. It should be done from the start and planned and costed in.
Thanks. And I was talking about the instant messaging, voicemail, video conferencing. So when we talk about the link as a solution, so you get all of those modalities. Absolutely, you're going to get dial tone and voicemail, which many of the PBX are providing. But when you look at the broader set here, video conferencing, telephony, web, email, and audio conferencing, so all of that, and at the top of it, you get the kind of centralized mechanism where it gets the authenticated. So all the applications, I think if some of you were here in the morning when we were delivering the link security session, so you can see that how much security is inherited within the link. If we talk about the PBX world, okay, you know, we deploy it and then we will talk about the security. But here, with all of these modalities, you're going to get the security by default, all TLS, HTTPS, and MTLS. And I will strongly encourage you to listen to that, if possible, the security session which we had today. So overall, once you have it, then the user experience is huge. So you get all of these features which we are talking about. So once we are clear what the broader objectives are for the collaboration solutions, what we are looking for, what our goals are, and if we can do the network assessment to make sure the network is ready, we are working with the network team. And then the next thing comes, okay, what we have, link as a solution, what type of deployment options we have, what if we want to go to cloud there, what is our cloud strategy? Because that's why we put the first slide there. Do we want to have enterprise-wise? Enterprise-wise, what I mean is if you can call to PSTN, if you can have maybe response groups, if you want to integrate with your call center environment, or if you have boss admin scenarios there in your environment, or you have analog phones, you have fax there. So this is really important to know. Once we know what the goals are, then these are the deployment options which we have, like on-prem. When I say on-prem, it means you can install Link Server. We are talking about 2013, either in your data center, or you can ask a partner to host it. That is the Link Server 2013. So you will get all the capabilities which we are talking about, and we will discuss in next slides. Know about the cloud. By the way, how many of you attended Link Online today? Anybody? Okay. So in Link Online, what I mean is the Office 365 solution. So there we have IAM, presence, and conferencing so far. So if the strategy is to go to the cloud, absolutely it can happen, but not today. So we do not offer enterprise-wise in the cloud today. You will get conferencing and some other features. So these are the two main differentiators between Link on-prem and Link online. And then we have a hybrid there, right? You see the hybrid thing there, where you can have a mix of these both things. And I will explain based on my experience, where the customer thinks hybrid makes sense. So for example, if the business requirement is there are 10,000 users or 5,000 users, and only 4,000 of them need IAM presence and conferencing only, and rest 1,000 need enterprise-wise. So then you can do this way if this is the requirement. If, okay, we say these people, they already have PBX, whatever, you know, we can go with 4,000 that IAM presence and 1,000 go to enterprise-wise. So this is the one. And the second I have seen, the gradual migration from PBX to the cloud. So they build the infrastructure there, like Link, and gradually move the users from on-prem to the online. Again, we do not have any enterprise-wise capabilities in the cloud, but these are the two scenarios. And when I talk to the customers, when they feel, okay, we have to build one environment on-prem, and then we also have to do the cloud. So most of the time they say, you know, we are fine so far, maybe on-prem. And down the road, once you have enterprise-wise in the cloud, we will get that. So that's based on my experience. The other, I would say there is some kind of maybe confusion that, okay, can the cloud users, let's say I give you example, 4,000 users, they are in the cloud. Can they use enterprise-wise features from the on-prem? No. Only those 4,000 users which are in the cloud, they can just use IAM presence and conferencing. They cannot leverage any of the feature for the enterprise-wise. So you have to make a decision in the beginning what you want to do, whether you want to have on-prem or you want to go with the Link Online. Any questions, by the way, on this? And then the other scenario is the exchange. So you can have exchange on-prem, if you like, or you can have exchange in the cloud. So both ways you can do it. Like you have Link Server here on-prem, and you can bring the exchange online, or you can have maybe Link Online there, and you can have exchange online. So most of the features, you know, once you have Link on-prem, so you will get all enterprise-wise capabilities. And once you have Link Online, the IAM presence conferencing only, but you can do exchange anywhere. At the high level, here's the Link Server 2013 architecture. By the way, how many of you here are familiar with the basic architecture for 2013? So, okay, many of you. So I will just spend like 2 minutes on that. So if you look here, in the center, you will see the front-end server that, and then front-end server does for all your call processing, IAM presence, and all of that. In 2013, the overall benefit from 2010 is simplified architecture. Here we have co-located many roles like archiving, monitoring, mediation server. Again, depends if you want to do that based on the business needs. So we have co-located that. And here on the left-hand side, if you see here, I think it's for maybe right, the edge server and reverse proxy for the external users is there. And if you want to do the federation, if we are talking about maybe Office 365 or you want to federate with other partners, So it needs to go through edge server and reverse proxy. So these are the components on the right-hand side. If you look at there, maybe on your left there, you have voicemail. We are using Exchange there and file store. The one thing which in 2013 it was new with the architecture point of view was the web application server, from where you get the PowerPoint and all of that. So this is the simple architecture. The PSTN connectivity with the link. So once we have, again, going back to the first slide, where we talk about once we have identified the requirement, what the business requirements are, right? Do we want to use link as a full enterprise voice where we can have analog phones, fax machines, boss admin scenarios, want to integrate if required with the PBX? So we definitely, link is capable of doing all of that, which we discussed, and you can use it as a full enterprise-wide solution. However, most of the customers, they already have a PBX, right? And they say, we have already invested a lot of money into the PBX, so tell us the way we can leverage our existing investment, and this can be integrated with the Link server. So there we will talk about how we can leverage that integration and what is possible on it. So DirectSIP is the method that is used for the integration between the vendors. There are, by the way, a couple of methods, but the preferred method for us is the DirectSIP integration. What it does is you have a link pool and you have a PBX. So it's IP to IP connectivity between these two things, the link pool and the PBX. And we also have a list of vendors that we are continuously testing different versions. If you go to UCOIP web page, and there you will see the certain versions of PBX which are tested with the Link Server 2013 with the integration. But sometime if it's not there or you feel it's old PBX and maybe it cannot communicate through DirectSIP, so then we need to leverage a gateway in between that. What the gateway does, it does the transcoding, it offload transcoding and some supplementary services. It can make sure that if some codec is not understandable by DIC, it can decode that or it can transcoding provide you on it. So that is how we can do the integration. The session border controller. This is, you can say, kind of enhanced gateway and much more capabilities on that. I have seen that a lot, more and more into the environment. Sometime, if you have a PBX and if you have a, I would say, maybe the link there, and you are thinking, okay, we want to do the call routing between these two, because each call, let's say, I am a link user, registered on the link server, and I want to make a call outside, but PBX has the control for all the gateways and all the phones. So the link call will go to the PBX, and PBX will route it to the outside world. That's how the call flow will happen. And in order to that happen, you have to create some kind of call routing on the link side and also on the PBX side. What the session border controller can do for you, instead of creating that, you can create that call routing logic on the session border controller. The benefits for that is if you want to replace the PBX down the road, you don't need to worry about it because you haven't changed anything on the PBX and there, so the call routing is there. Some other benefits it has is also it offloads many transcoding capabilities on it. Let me show you that. So that's how this works in between that, between the PBX, so it can connect on one side on the PBX. It can have your fax machines, analog lines. It can definitely give you the IP phones which you have. And the other thing you can do is you can always terminate SIP trunking through the SPC. Like PRI connectivity, or I think in Europe we call E1 or SIP trunking. So you can terminate that through the session border controller. So overall, it gives you much more benefits if you have it in between the use it as an integration there, and it can give you all of those capabilities. Because people like me who work like 8 years, I would say, in the PBX world from the Cisco side, so maybe in some organization, you cannot change the culture right away. Like, you cannot say everybody, okay, use the Link client on your smart device or on your PC and you're good. Some people still want to have desk phone there. They want to have the analog. They don't want to go right away with the e-fax or something. They still want to use their faxing. So this gives you capability for all of that you can do it. Still, you can integrate with the existing PBX. You can leverage that. And once you feel that is end of sale, end of sport, your existing PBX, then you can bring all the users on the Link and still use whatever you want to use through the SBC or any gateways. Any questions here, by the way, so far? Either I was able to explain something or nothing at all. No questions there. Okay. So about the call routing then, how many of you, again, are familiar with the call routing concept, either coming through the PBX or let's say first with the Link call routing? So we have few. What about the overall like PBX call routing environment, if some people are coming from there? Okay, good. So I will try to explain a little bit in the beginning about the dial plans, normalization, and then we will take a real example how the call flow happens. In the dial plans, we always create some kind of rules there within the Link server how the call will go. And it is very important to understand when we are thinking about the dial plans, especially when we are replacing existing PBX, how people dial the call, for example, if I am in Toronto and I'm going to dial 9 most of the time based on where the organization, you dial 9 and then you go out. But maybe it's different in US. Maybe it's different in Germany, different in Barcelona. So we need to understand what the dialing habits are, right? First of all, we want to make sure. The second thing is, what are the, like the extension, local extension, it's a 4-digit or 5-digit? How many total locations we have within an organization? How they are dialing each other? Are they dialing full number, or are they maybe right now they are just communicating with each other as a full E164 number, which I will explain what they are, or maybe they are just using the extension. So maybe if they will have impact, so we need to understand that to create the routing logic. That is very important. Once we understand that behavior, then we can create the normalization rules, right? So what the normalization rule does is it actually creates your number into E164 number, fully understandable number for the Link server for different purposes, which we will discuss during the call flow. For example, here, if you see the pattern to match normally, there is here. There you see the caret sign. It starts with 2-3, and it can have 2 more digits. And when somebody dials that 4-digit, and translation pattern we create within the Link server is, okay, if this is in UK, then do +44 and add these digits. That's why it's very important to know where the user is. I am based in Northern Virginia, and for me, 10-digit is a local number. So translation pattern which I will create is, let's say 703304XXX. So whenever I dial any number, the normalization pattern will be add +1, whatever this user is dialing. But maybe it's different. It's a variable length here in Barcelona, different country. So it will be different. So once we know that, based on that, we can create the translation patterns, normalization rules. And again, if you are dialing international, if I am based in US, so for me it's 011, right? So, but from here, if you dial, it's 001 or 001. So whatever the number dial, we create the normalization rule, how to change that number into full E164 number. So we build that logic in the beginning. We work with the If you are a customer, if you want to do it yourself, you will talk to your PBX team, understand what the dial plans looks like. So based on that, you will create that normalization rule, and overall, once you are there, then okay, you are ready to implement it. The other thing, it could be site dial plan, it could be pool dial plan, and it could be user dial plan. What's the reason? If I am creating that, I don't want to create for every user a dial plan. So what I will do, I will maybe do a template. I can create a template, let's say for local or extensions or national, international emergency numbers. I will create a template. And then I will apply that template based on the business requirements, either at the site level or at the global level. Global level you will always have. And then we have some maybe specific user, so we can create separate for them. So I will create just the templates for it. And then we have WISE policies, PSTN usages, and routes. So WISE policy mean, if you're using enterprise WISE, maybe you're already familiar with that. Or if you are coming from the PBX world, you will be familiar with that. What it does is that you don't want to give everybody rights to call international. You have lobby phones most of the time. If you have lobby phones, so you don't want anybody just to walk in, pick up the phone, and dial international number, right? So you want to make sure you give it a proper WISE policy, and it can call somewhere. We call it also class of service where it can call. And we also have executives that you want to give them maybe international access. That is also possible. And you have some users that you just want to give them maybe long distance national calling. So these all things covers in the WISE policies, and then we have PSTN usages. It's a term. If I create the templates, I have local, national, international, all of those templates. So I call them PSTN usages. I associate these usages to WISE policy. It's just like a glue. PSTN usage is associated with the WISE policy, and on the other hand, it is associated with the routes and then the gateways. So once we create the template, so this is really important to understand that they can go associate to multiple WISE policies, multiple routes. So we can do that. By the way, any questions here? Because if for some reason you're not doing already enterprise WISE or you're not from the PBX world, maybe it looks very kind of tricky or mathematical, but people who are doing it, maybe it's a piece of cake for them. They say, we already know what the WISE policy is and what you can do. The overall idea for this is that you get a granular level of control for everything, right? So you can decide what you want to do as an organization, which area, if you have multiple locations, how you want to give everybody access, or which people and what time you can do, or maybe if you want to give some call transfer capabilities, how can you do it? And these are just examples. If you create a template, you can do, okay, enable call forwarding, delegation. So all of these features you are getting once you are creating the WISE policies there. That finally you have to associate with that. Okay, before I go here. So I have one question because we have also some giveaways. Let's say if I apply a WISE policy, right? We talk about a WISE policy. One, you have a generic template, let's apply it for a site. And then you also have another WISE policy that you apply for a specific user. And if both are applied, you know, because site policy, if already a user is in a site, he already has a policy once we apply the site policy. No, I am creating a user-specific policy too that will also apply to the user. Which WISE policy will get priority? Sure, go. Let's get the mic there.
User policy? Most specific policy goes first?
Absolutely, yeah, you're right. So let me, if you want to give him or if I want, okay. Yeah, absolutely. It's a party tonight. Thank you. So the reason for that is, sorry, I think this was here. So the reason for that is because once you create the template, right, and then everybody gets that site policy. And once you have site policy, then you want to say, okay, these people, you want to give them a specific rights, maybe call international or something. And there you can apply that user policy. So that always get higher priority. The user policy will get high priority. So this is, we will walk you through the alive call, how it, when a user dials the call, what happens? It goes through different processes here, and we will walk you through that. So when a user dials a number, there are a couple of possibilities, right? If I am using a link client, or I am using a phone, in both cases, if I am using a link client, and if I have somebody there in my buddy list, I'm going to right-click and dial it. It will just go right away because it has a SIP URI, like a full number. Then it will go and hit the endpoint on the extreme right-hand side. It will hit there, and the call will go through. That's simple. Because in that process, no, it's already normalized. You're just hitting a SIP URI, and the call is going through, right? No. If I want to dial a number, right, as we discuss about the normalization rule, what the normalization does. We talk about the wise policy. Now we have created the normalization rule. As your assumption is, we have created that. Now if somebody dials, let's say, 4-digit extension, right, if he can dial anything. So as soon as he dials it, the first thing going to happen is, they're going to see, okay, is it an emergency number or no? If it's an emergency number, if it's calling 911 in North America, I'm not sure here, maybe it's 999 or something. That's why it's really important where the user is located. So based on that, we create the normalization rule for that and for that pool. If it's an emergency number, it's going to say yes, and then right away, it's going to apply the location services. It will go there based on the user profile. It's going to call to the nearest police station, and the call will go there, however you set it up. So that's why one thing which I forgot to mention in the beginning, the enterprise-wise, well, absolutely, you get 911 compatibility here. It's fully E911 or 911 compatible. If there is emergency, you can dial the number, and you will get all the coverage. And let's say it's not emergency number, right? Now the third, say what we can. So we, in this call flow, we are looking different possibilities going through what happens when a call goes. The second is, okay, it's not emergency number. Then let's see if it is a global number or no. For the global perspective, the first thing it does is it checks the plus sign. If I am dialing a number using with plus 1416 something, it says it's a global number already. You know, it's fine, so let me ring that number. And also check if, as long as this guy has the wise policy set right and it has associated gateways routes, let me do that. But if it's not a global number, right, then it's going to say, okay, let's see what the normalization rules are. If I am trying to convert this number back into the E164 number, Is it converting properly or no? For example, as I said, I was in, if I am in Northern Virginia, and instead of 10-digit, I type there 12-digit, right? And it's supposed to do normalize to 11-digit, but no, it will say, it will give me this message, right? It says, you are dialing a wrong number. Just like you, from your headset, you dial a number, and if you dial a wrong number, it tells you, okay, the number is wrong, or whatever fast, busy message it gives you based on the country where you are. Here it's gonna give, tells you, no, this, there is no match for it. You are dialing a, in other words, you are dialing a wrong number. And then there are also features within the link environment, which Adam will discuss, is about the call park and link handling services response group. So we have full call park, or group call, a team call, which we'll discuss. So we, once we are doing the dial plan planning, we also say we want to implement call pods. So there is a range of numbers that we're going to specify that will be used for the call pod. So it will check whether this number, which is dial, is it a call park number or no? So if it's a call park number, then it will go accordingly, and the call park will be invoked. And the other thing it does check is if it's after that, he will do a reverse number lookup. By the way, anybody knows what is the reverse number lookup? Sure, go ahead.
Check that the number is on
the system itself. Yeah, so reverse number, just I can repeat the answer. So it checks itself if the number is in the system or no. What it means is, rather than going to the gateway or PBX, let me check if it is an internal user. Then I can dial internally. Rather than going through all the route away, I can dial it internally. Can I get one? Thank you. Here you go. You're welcome. And let's say if there is no match found or something, then it's going to always check your policies. What policies you have there, how call admission control. This is another feature. For the sake of time, we were not covering this here. So you can also apply call admission control. For example, if the bandwidth is not enough, if there is a call, if you have bandwidth for 10 calls, then 11th call is coming. So you can apply that, and then the call will be rerouted through PSTN. So it also checks your CAC policies, whether this user has call admission control applied there or no. And here it is checking one by one whatever you have done with the policies, because even the number is correct now. Maybe it's an international call. It's going to check whether that user have rights to make that call or no. He can dial the number. It doesn't matter, right? Anybody can put the ATM card into the machine, bank machine, but if he has no money there, he's not going to get it, right? So the same way, anybody can dial the number, but if he does not have rights, so he cannot call, international or national. So it is again checking if it's call park here. Okay. And these PSTN usages were there, it is checking, okay, this guy has maybe local access, it has national, it has international. When it checks all of that, and then it will see, okay, no, this has the access, and now it's going to check the routes, and the routes are associated with your gateways, right? And before going there, it wants to make sure if I am releasing that number to the PSTN now, whether I need to change anything here, whether I need to maybe remove plus, which he has, or change into 7-digit number or 8-digit number. So on the trunk level, we have that flexibility to do that. And finally, the call goes through if he has the rights. And so these are all steps. The call flow explains step by step what happens when a user make a call. So from here, it looks like maybe it's going to take a lot of time, but it happens simultaneously as soon as you dial the number. And if it has the rights, the call will go through. The whole idea for explaining that is also like you understand what's happening in the background. The other is the link. If you're using it as a full PBX, it gives you the flexibility and control how you want to create the dial plan. If you have multiple locations or if you have a centralized locations based on your needs, if you have 4-digit or 5-digit extension, it depends. So you can do all of that. So now I will talk about the media bypass. Anyone has any questions so far on the call routing? Any questions? No? Okay. So media bypass, right? So this is a feature available if the media flows directly between your link client and the gateway. Normally, you see the call flow. What it goes is it normally goes to the mediation server. Okay, here the media is going. No, still the signaling will go through the mediation server, but the media can flow directly between the link endpoint and the gateway. What it does is actually it saves. I think in next slide I will explain the overall its benefits. So you. During the media bypass, we are using G711 codec. So G711 codec is the best codec which we can get for the PSTN calls. It has maybe a little bit more bandwidth, but we are doing it over the LAN, local area network, because media bypass, we are normally doing it LAN from the link client to your gateway. So we are not worried a lot about the bandwidth on the LAN environment. If it's over the WAN, then absolutely. You know, we will think twice before doing the G711. So once you are doing media bypass, then remember one thing. For all the conferencing calls, right, if you have maybe a lot of conferencing sessions, so still you cannot do media bypass on the conferencing calls. So once you do plan your bandwidth, just make sure you take into consideration. And this is just a visual example of what I was talking about. If a link client now makes a call, you can see the signaling is flowing through the mediation server, but the media is going through between the link client and the gateway. Right. So what it does is overall topology simplification, right? If you have multiple locations, multiple branches, you don't need to place your mediation server on each location because you are doing media bypass. Otherwise, when this feature was not available, you have to have mediation server on each location and you are increasing the number of servers. Absolutely, you don't need to do transcoding again now because it's going directly there and it reduces the overall latency. And as I mentioned that AVMCU doesn't support media bypass so far. One question, yeah.
I've got a question. When a link client is talking to another link client, how is the media flow then?
Right, peer to peer. Yeah, it's going between these two, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. So I will give you later the partition. How we configure the media bypass. So in that, we absolutely want to make sure the subnet mask match client's mask when we are doing. It's a little bit different than call admission control, where we say, okay, only 10.0.0 will find because it has three octets that need to match. So absolutely want to make sure the subnet mask is matching clients because there is an MS subnet header that is required there. You can enable globally. If it's a centralized site, absolutely enable it globally. And then again, other thing you need to check is you can still, so media bypass and call admission control cannot work same time on same site. You have to decide. Either you want to do media bypass or you want to do the call admission control. But you can do multiple sites. You can do on one site, maybe media bypass, on the other site, call admission control. Based on your business needs, you can do that. And then encryption option for that. There are many gateways that support encryption, and there are some gateways that don't support encryption. So just make sure when you're doing that, what kind of gateway you are using. And then you have to check that there. Right? And the same, the refer support on the gateways, some gateways support refer, and some don't support. So we need to check. What refer does is like, after even call is getting transferred, so still the media is being bypassed if the gateway is supporting the refer. So here is the PowerShell commands that we need to enable media bypass. So you can create the trunks on the topology builder, but it's not fully exposed yet on the topology builder, so you need to have some commands on the PowerShell. And down below, if you see, there is the encryption level that you need to put if you support it or if you don't support it, right? Any questions here so far? Okay, so I will give Adam now here for the call handling services, yeah.
So we're going to look at the call handling services and the link. So this assumes that you've done everything Zcovers, you've decided to use Link as your PBX, you've linked it into PBX or a SIP trunk provider, and now we're in a scenario where users are actually using Link as their PBX. So on traditional PBXs, we had functionality like ACD, call park, group pickup, and a whole bunch of those have been replicated within Link to work. So we're going to cover off response groups, which is Microsoft's version of basic ACDs. We're going to cover off call park, and then unassigned numbers, and there's one or two other things we may touch on at the same time. So the response group service, it's a very basic ACD functionality. It allows a call that comes in to be distributed to multiple people. This is also where the hunt group functionality is buried within Link. So even if you don't want an IVR or call by time routing or plain announcement, but you just want a call to come in and ring through to four or five different people, either at the same time, in serial, in parallel, in a round robin format, whatever it may be, this is where response groups comes in. So response groups is a UCMA-based service. So again, this is something else which doesn't work with Media Bypass. So as I said, anything which goes to an AVMCU does not support Media Bypass, but also any UCMA-based applications also don't support Media Bypass, whether that's ones written by Microsoft or ones written by third parties. So this is not intended to replace a contact center. If at the moment you've got enterprise-based or even small-end contact centers where you require things like agent monitoring, agent whisper, decent call stats, wall board, supervisor monitoring, all that functionality is not built into response groups. It's not designed to become a 1,000-seat or even 100-seat contact center. It doesn't work like that, and it's not designed to. And Microsoft will never scale it up to go like that. That's why there's third parties out there. There are certified programs for it. And again, if you look on the UCOIP page, they're all listed on there. So managing response groups. So for the most part, response groups are managed through two web interfaces, the usual link control panel, and also through dedicated web service. You can also manage response groups through PowerShell. It is a complete pain to do, and I wouldn't recommend anybody does it. They're a pain to modify afterwards, but you can do whatever you like with response groups if you do it through PowerShell, but it becomes extremely complex. So we have a concept of agents. These are people who will answer the phone when it gets routed to them. We have a participation policy, formal or informal. So formal is where an agent has to sign in. They go to a web page, they check a box, they say, I'm ready for calls for this response group. Informally, if you're signed in and you're available within Link, you'll get a call routed to you. But we are aware of present state. So there is a routing method called attendant, which will ignore present states, apart from do not disturb. The rest will follow present states. So if you're away or busy or in do not disturb, you won't get a call routed to you. You have to be available. And that's where some people slightly mess up with the configuration, and you need to start turning off things like idle after 15 minutes if it's a receptionist who is talking to people or dealing with mail or that type of thing, where they won't be there. We also have things like alert time and routing method. So queues. These are groups of agents. We can overflow from one queue to another, one group of agents to another. This is where you get your tiering. So first line, second line, third line, then onto voicemail or out to an external answering service. We specify how many people can be in that queue at any one time, or if you want to overflow based on ring time. So if there's someone been in that queue for 10 minutes, maybe we've put them onto the second line team. Or if there's 20 people in that queue, actually let's start in moving some people off to a backup team to take some of that workload. So workflows. These are what are configured in a separate web interface. And this is where you really configure what happens within that response group. So we have hunt groups, which are basic call routing. The ability to say, if somebody calls a sales number, it will ring through to five salespeople. The first one to answer it talks to them. If no one answers, we put it through to voicemail or we put it through to the admin staff. And then we have interactive groups. And these are where you have a prompt coming in saying, thank you for calling Contoso. Press 1 for sales, press 2 for support, press 3 to speak to finance. So within Link, there is a predefined groups into these, and there's a one-tier solution and there's a two-tier solution, and that's press 1, 2 or 3, and for two tiers Once you press 1, you can then press 1, 2, or 3, you know, whatever it may be. There can also be vocal voice responses as well. So press or say 1, press or say 2. This is all the web interface lets you do. You can configure time of day routing. You can say the queue's only open between 9 and 5. We're on holiday at Christmas, so put it through to voicemail. Or the UK shut, so send it to India or the US or wherever it may be for follow the sun routing. Like I said, you can do a lot more than that with PowerShell. It is horrible to do, and if anyone's looking at doing that complexity with response groups, it's usually the wrong product to choose. Look at some third-party solutions which allow you to do it, because otherwise the PowerShell gets very messy, very confusing, and very, very painful to manage. So when it comes to managing response groups, we don't want the IT administrator to have to do everything. So this was functionality brought in 2013 based on feedback to allow what is usually known as call center supervisors or team leaders to actually configure the response groups a bit. So it allows them to delegate some of that control through the RBAC settings, where they can manipulate some of it, so change holiday dates, change opening times, move people in and out of groups as maybe without needed. So here's kind of a visual representation of it. So we can have different managers for different work groups, and we can have completely unmanaged ones. And it just allows a bit of that granular control to be passed down, so the IT administrator doesn't have to do everything. So again, a functionality brought in 2013 is the ability to hide an agent. So you may get into a scenario where it's an internal IT support desk, for example. You want internal users to call that support desk, but you don't actually want them to know the name or the contact details of the person that's been called. Because otherwise, they'll bypass the queue, they've got to wait, they'll just call the person direct. And that is a scenario which is very painful because things don't get logged, he may be on holiday, people get annoyed, all because they try to shortcut a process. So this is the ability so that usually if you're calling response groups internally or through Federation, if you call them, the minute you get transferred to the agent, you see that person's name in the window. It says their name, it has the details, you can get their SIP URI, you can get their phone number, you can get their email address, whatever's published. If you want to do that anonymously, and this is set per workflow, it hides that. All you see is you're calling the response group. One thing to note with this is that it changes the flow of the call. So if it's not anonymous, the media will start to flow peer-to-peer once these two users talking to each other. If we keep with the anonymous, we also keep the UCMA application within there to hide who's talking to each other. So one thing to add is, again, there's nothing like call recording in this, so if you have compliance for contact centers, this is the wrong product to use. So the unassigned number service. This is a service which very few people use until somebody starts moaning. This is the ability for Link to say, if a call gets routed to me and it's within a predefined block and I don't have a user assigned to that, do something with it. Because by default, if a call gets routed to Link and Link does not own that number, unless there's inter-trunk routing set up, it will refuse the call. It'll come back as number unknown or busy or however the gateway or the PBX is configured. That's great, and it may be what you want. The problem is you have a sales team, they're all on Link, somebody leaves, they get disabled from Link because the IT department's done exactly what they say, someone they were dealing with calls up and gets number unknown. That could be a $1 million deal that's just walked out the room because they got no response. It could be that they think the whole business has gone under because they get in number unknown. Well, with an unassigned number service, we can actually triage that. We can say, here's the block of numbers assigned to sales. If it's not assigned to somebody, a call comes through, send it to the sales support people, send it to the sales hunt group, send it to voicemail. There's a lot of flexibility in what you do with it, but at least it's not number unknown. It can be an announcement saying, unfortunately, this person's no longer with the company. We're going to route you through to the receptionist who'll be able to help you. It's a great feature, which not a lot of people use. You do need to know a bit of PowerShell to configure it, things like the announcements, but it's really worth looking at and exploring rather than get the bad treatment of number unknown coming through. And you can do it for different blocks. So if you've got a sales block, a support block, you can triage in different ways. I think that's pretty much what I could offer. So there is some PowerShell in there to do the announcements. You can upload custom WAV files as well. You don't have to use text-to-speech. You can use whatever you like. But it does work really, really well. So CallPark was a feature that came in late 2010, early 2013 type time frame. And this was brought in for the ability to somebody to call in, call a receptionist. The person's not near a phone. They're a floor walker. They're a manager who walks around a store. But we want to park that number somewhere rather than keeping them on hold with a receptionist. Maybe put a PA announcement saying, could Joe Blogs call 1234 to pick up call from somebody. That's where this functionality comes in. It was put in for a lot of the European market. It's quite popular. It's not so popular in the US. Again, you can configure what happens with this. So you configure what's known as orbits. Literally, these are just extension numbers. You configure a range. So if you configure a range of 10 numbers, you can park 10 calls at any one time. And you can configure who's allowed to do this. There's some strange terminology in here. Orbit's not one. The other one is they call it the parking lot when you want to park a call. Not quite sure why they didn't say park call. And we can do some functionality to make sure these calls aren't buried and forgotten about. So we can say, well, if the call's not picked up from the call park within 30 seconds, send it back to the person who parked it, so back to the receptionist or back to the admin user. And they get told it's recalled back, so the person can answer it going, sorry, the person wasn't available or they haven't answered, we can put you back on into the call park, or can I take a message, or can I transfer you to their voicemail? There's ways of making sure that we don't forget about things, because that's the worst thing that can actually happen is you park a call, you leave someone there for 20 minutes, they get bored, frustrated, and hang up. Much better off sending them to voicemail or taking a note or doing something with it. So CallPark, again, it's all these enterprise voice features. Said it's enabled on a user-by-user basis, so you can enable it for the staff, receptionists, the attendants, but not for every user, as it can get abused. It's a number range per pool. It's got to be a globally unique range, but not DDI. So calls can't be picked up externally. So there's no DDIs assigned to them. There's no way for somebody who's on their mobile to dial an external number and pick that up. If you're using the Link mobile service, again, it works. You can pick it up because it's a Link call. It's not a call from the outside world. There's other settings in PowerShell. What you'll find as you start looking more and more at Link is we allow you to do a lot of stuff through the web interface. We allow you to do a lot more stuff through PowerShell. So you can quite often find the settings which you've heard exist or you've seen other people use and you can't find them through the web interface. You can find them in PowerShell. It's a good way to explore, run some of the get commands, look at what can be configured on users or CallPark or response groups or whatever it may be. But there's a lot of stuff which is hidden, not on purpose, but there's just too much complexity in there to surface it all through the web interface, make it very crowded and very confusing. So just look quickly at kind of the media flow that happens with CallPark. So Alex receives an incoming call. Well, Bob receives an incoming call from Alex. It goes through the mediation server. It goes to the front end. At this point, we could be doing media bypass because it's a peer-to-peer call, depending on the configuration. It gets parked. They don't want to talk about it, but he gets sent back a number, and that's a CallPark number hash 199. So it doesn't have to just be a complete number. We do support hash or star in front of the number if you just want to completely move it out of the main path and make sure it's not confused with an extension. Then we got to tell the person that it's parked, so please call hash 199 to pick up your parked call. So somebody from another Link endpoint, be it a physical phone, be it a Link client, in the search bar or on the keypad types in hash 199, that call then gets routed to them. At this point, the media moves off the front-end server, moves to the endpoint, and here we could establish another media bypass call if it's configured. And we're quite close to the end. The last thing to touch on is the devices which are available for Link. As the Link ecospace has grown over the years, more and more devices have come around. So in the early days, Microsoft seeded the market with things like Link Phone Edition, the Roundtable. The Roundtable has now moved to Polycom. They now sell that and develop it. And Polycom, SNOM, are all bringing out their own versions of Link phones, built on generic SIP stacks, SNOM with their entire range, Polycom with the VVX series. There's DEX phones from Spectralink, which actually used to be Polycom but was split out. So there's a lot of endpoints out there to use and fill in a lot of space. SpectraLink, for example, do phones from generic deck phones to deck phones which are certified to working factories and nuclear power stations and production lines where there's no interference and their package of dust doesn't get in the way and things like that. So there are a lot of options out there. Microsoft certify most of these. So the UCIP page, just type in link UCIP in Bing or Google or whatever your preferred search engine is, and you'll be able to find it. And there's a list on there. All the vendors support them. So Polycom have white paper, Schnomda as well, on how to configure all of this. Maybe it's not intuitive to Phone Edition, but there's some great functionality in there to use.
Right. And also, like, overall, if we look at the summary now, we started with defining the business requirements within your organization. And then you can decide based on the features, which you see, okay, do I need enterprise-wise, or I am just looking for IM presence conferencing. Then you can see the cloud solution if it fits your need and meets your security requirements. But if you see, okay, I need to have, I have analog phones, I have PBX integration, I have maybe contact center solution which I want to integrate, I have fax, my needs are much, much bigger. Then you can see the Link Server 2013 on-prem is the best solution, and it can meet all your criteria. We did not discuss in detail about the architecture, what happened with the disaster recovery, how scalable solution is. I think if you have attended the session about the high availability and disaster recovery, I think it was yesterday.
Yes.
That explains in detail about the architecture of the components. And if you are interested to know about the security, how the Link security works, then there was also a session today about the Link security. So as a whole, if you are looking for your organization, we want to enterprise-wise, not only dial tune and voicemail only, but look at overall pictures. You get dial tune, voicemail, IM presence, RDO, multi-party video conferencing out of the box. There are many vendors that can provide you maybe multi-party video, but they're gonna maybe ask another system, totally different system, huge cost associated with that, and this is easy to manage, because you're getting all of the functionality out of the box from the Link Server 2013. So with that, I would thanks for everyone. If there are any questions, we are here.
There's also Ask the Experts at 6 o'clock,
yeah,
where all the Link speakers and the MVPs and whoever else is around will be down there to answer questions. So please come down. I think there's free beer and food again. And please remember to fill in your evaluations as well.
Yeah.
We do read them all. They are taken into account for future sessions or anything else, so please. But questions?
Questions, here was one.
What question? The response group is, as far as I know, only working for voice dials, right? So if I would like to have an instant messaging against the help desk, there's no real possibility, right?
Correct.
Correct.
So within the inbuilt functionality, that doesn't exist. Again, that's something you'd have to look at a partner to try and deliver through their own applications.
I wanted to ask about trunk configuration normalization rules.
Yes.
There are calling and call number normalization. When these rules take part?
Right. So it depends, again, what your business needs are. If we look at the diagram there, and then you can decide when it is leaving the trunk, what you want to do with the number, or when it is coming to the trunk, and there you can change on both ways, for the inbound trunk and outbound trunk. So based on your needs, what you can do it on the trunk.
Okay, so both ways it
yes.
can do.
Yes, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Any more questions?
In that case, thank you very much for attending.
Thank
we'll
you so much.
Ask the experts.